Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. He's been involved in the creation of some of the most important legislation of the 20th century, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the Highway Safety Act, and on, they all have Ralph Nader's DNA all over them. He's also been the protector of citizens and consumers with a push for mine safety, food safety, airbags, and seatbelts. But Ralph Nader has also been called a spoiler by the Democratic Party, perhaps unfairly, for his 2000 candidacy for president. Today, Nader is pushing a point of view that many in America share, that there's not a dime worth of difference between the modern Republicans and the Democratic Party, and that it's time to cut the Gordian knot of the gridlock and the tribalistic politics in Washington, D.C., and unite progressives and libertarians on common issues. Nader writes about it, how the work would how this would happen with his new book, Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. If you have a question or a comment for Ralph Nader, please call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, or email us at thesource@tpr.org. And Ralph Nader, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much, David.
So we've got a Venn diagram, two big circles overlapping. We got a common area in the middle of what the progressives and what the libertarians would want. And so what do we have in that common area?
Well, we have enormous area of range in American life and how it can be improved. For example, you start out with the way people are taking stands in their normal conversation, public opinion polls, and there's a huge left-right alliance against corporate welfare, subsidies, handouts, and bailouts for Wall Street. It's part of the Main Street to Wall Street approach. Number two, they want the revision of the Patriot Act. The Texas State Republican Platform of 2002 made a big deal of this. They said the war on terrorism must never be used as an excuse to restrict our civil liberties. That's George W. Bush's party back in Texas. Number three is a crackdown on corporate crime. They want those crooks in Wall Street prosecuted and put away. The phrase is jail time, not bail time. The fourth is that they are really getting increasingly upset with the wars of empire. This is where Ron Paul's libertarian constituency comes in and allies itself with Congressman Barney Frank's progressive backers. They actually work together in the House to confront the bloated, wasteful, redundant military budget and the wars of empire overseas. And number four, five, they all like direct democracy. They like referendum, recall, and initiative. It's in 20-some states. I don't think it's in Texas. But they like to have the final voice when the lawmakers turn their back on them. But I've got 24 areas. Even the raising the minimum wage, as Governor O'Malley just did by signing a law in Maryland, comes in 70 to 80%. You know, whenever the polls show 70 to 80 to 90%, like breaking up the big banks in New York, you know, banks too big to fail, fooling around with risky derivatives as we speak and raising the specter of another crash, when you see the polls coming in at 70 to 80% or more, that means there's a lot of people who label themselves conservatives and liberals in that poll result.
In your book, Unstoppable, you talk about how in the past there are examples of left and right coming together to take on the power structure and winning.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first of all, the auto safety bill passed unanimously in the House of Representatives, for example, in 1966. And let me tell you, the auto industry was lobbying it right and left. It almost passed unanimously in the Senate. Why? Because the members of the Congress know that people back home, regardless of their ideological labels, they drive cars. They have kids in their car. They want cars to be safe. They want a crash where they can survive with seatbelts, etc. And so I've always followed this idea of bringing these abstract generalities that are used by the big corporatists to divide us and focus us on areas where left-right do agree and avert the giant areas where we do agree. The divide and rule often is done with very general principles, free enterprise, free markets, free election, you know, all that sort of. When you come down the abstraction ladder, you talk about people, you think there's a left and right disagreement on safe food, on safe drugs, on clean air, on decent parkland for their kids, on repairing the public facilities in towns and cities all over the country, the sewage water systems underground, the public transit, the highways, the bridges, and so forth. And that's what this book focuses on. Do you think there's a left-right division on the exercise of eminent domain, where eminent domain now can take your property, your home property, and give it to a corporation? I mean, there's a huge opposition to that, and that was expressed when 22 state legislators immediately passed the laws saying it's not going to happen after the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision said that the town of New London could take a whole neighborhood, condemn it, and give it to Pfizer Corporation, which, by the way, later quit the town after the neighborhood was destroyed. So it is happening. There was almost a majority left-right vote to block the NSA from dragnet snooping on Americans. And these liberals and conservatives in the House, they defied their own leadership, John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi. There is a left-right convergence back in 1986 on the False Claims Act, which has saved hundreds, tens of billions of dollars of corporate fraud on government contracting, the Pentagon and so forth. And that was a combination of active work between Democrat Howard Berman from California in the House and Republican Senator Chuck Grassley in the Senate. So we have examples in the past. We have to sense our own power when we, left-right, agree on something. We got to push it on the political table, on the election table. The media will pick up on it. And then it becomes not just public opinion, it becomes a political movement for improving America.
But the way it has worked thus far has been issue by issue. It's like ordering a la carte. But when you do party politics in which you're fighting against, that is, bundling. Like you get all the channels, whether or not you watch them or not.
Yeah, that's what is the obstacle. The obstacle is the existing political system where you have Republicans and Democrats interested in their own re-election careers, dialing for the same commercial dollars, and the flim-flamming the folks back home in gerrymandered districts where often there isn't even two-party competitive candidates on the ballot. It's either Democrat-dominated or a Republican-dominated. So, you know, they're on top of the heap. They control the political heights, the corporate interests, and their political allies. That, of course, is the obstacle to breaking through. But the more people realize, whether they're called liberals, progressives, libertarians, conservatives, that they do agree on major issues. They think the trade agreements should be revised because they're damaging our sovereignty and shipping whole industries and jobs abroad to communist and fascist regimes. That was another platform in 2002, the Texas Republican state. They opposed NAFTA and WTO. And I might say, they wrote more choices on the ballot, David. They may vote Republican, Democrat because they're hereditary voters, but it really comes in 60-65% of getting third and fourth party choices, so that there are different agendas and different issues that are pulled off the table by the two parties placed before the voters.
But when you do vote, you end up voting for a candidate, and you wonder how these candidates got here in the first place. I didn't pick these guys, and so it's a tyranny of a small choice.
Yeah, 90% of the congressional districts, and a lot of it is true for state legislative districts, are slam dunk, one party dominated, either Republican or Democrat. Well, I mean, you go to the polls. What's the choice? There's no choice, not even a choice between the two big guys. They've got it rigged. You have to admire the way they've developed control over the people. You know, the word corporation and company never appear in our Constitution. The Constitution, as we all know from school kid times, it starts with we the people, not we the corporation. So how come corporations and their political allies control us? Because we have convinced ourselves that we're powerless, that we can't fight City Hall or Exxon Mobil, and we withdraw from politics, and we think politics is a dirty word. And, of course, that just makes it worse for people. And so this book is an attempt to to give people a higher sense of substantive morale, that they can roar back. They can generate the rumble from the people that is heard from Austin to Washington, D.C. I mean, Nixon signed all kinds of great legislation, environmental, consumer, because he was afraid of the rumble from the people.
All right, Ralph Nader, we're going to continue our conversation. We invite calls. If you got a question or a comment for Ralph Nader, call in 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. When we come back, we're going to talk about tactics. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. That is the latest book from Ralph Nader, the legendary consumer activist. If you've got a question or comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Tanner has called in. Let's get Tanner on the air. Tanner, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Wondering if Mr. Nader could comment, has any practical steps that could be taken to improve the accountability of representatives to their constituencies, like perhaps structural changes or anything?
All right, Tanner, thanks for that question. Ralph Nader, response.
Well, if I heard it right, it's a little difficult to hear, how to move this type of consensus operationally to make changes. And the way to do it is to look at our pre-revolutionary innovation called the Committees of Correspondence that started in Massachusetts to challenge King George III's tyranny. And these committees had no chair. They were a way to collaborate people who may disagree on other issues, but they all agreed that they didn't want the tyranny of King George III. And so it's good for people just to, whether they call themselves liberals or conservatives, if they see an area such as eminent domain, or if they see an area such as messing around with librarians and snooping on what books you take out, they form committees of correspondence. Once they get together, the press is rather amused by this because they start articles like "Unlikely Allies Today."
Strange bedfellows.
Odd bedfellows. So actually, when they get together, they have an advantage of getting more press. When they get press, then they can move to put it on the table of local elected officials or candidates, and then state, and then federal. In Texas, you have Ron Paul. He's retired, but he can still raise a lot of combined support. I mean, he worked with Congressman Barney Frank, for example. He worked with some Democrats upset about the Federal Reserve's excesses. So that's the sequence. You want to think about it in terms of stages. First, you get together left-right on a major significant issue. It could be a local issue. It could be national. It could be empire, wars, all that. And second, you move it into the press. And there are all kinds of manuals where you can learn how to do that. And then third, you move it on the table. Once it gets on the table, the reason why people aren't talking about full Medicare for all, freedom of choice of doctors and hospitals, which we hardly have now anymore in the U.S., it never gets on the table of either party. Once it gets on the table, the press starts covering it, the polls start surveying it, and it becomes part of the public dialogue and dynamic. So those are the stages, and you can't be discouraged.
So that's the playbook. So, Ralph Nader, you've said that people should vote for support Rand Paul in his presidency, and that would be a step forward in the left-right alliance. Is that right?
Well, see, that's an erroneous rumor that's been circulating in the last week. What I said, and people have trouble thinking in non-categorical ways, what I said is Rand Paul is not good at all on federal health and safety regulation and environment and worker safety enforcement. He's not very good on full Medicare for all, but he is very good on civil liberties. He's good on ballot access for a variety of candidates, even if they're not Republican, Democrat. But he's most good on challenging the NSA snooping and challenging empire and wars of aggression overseas. Not as good as his father was, Ron Paul. But so here's my point. Okay, we oppose Rand Paul on these health and safety issues that I've worked on for so many years, I think have saved a lot of lives. But we support Rand Paul when he stands up in the Senate and takes on the NSA, takes on The snooping takes on the invasion of privacy and restriction of liberties. We have to stop thinking categorically if we're going to think tactically. Neither side is particularly winning many battles here. The conservatives are being beaten into the ground by the corporatists who masquerade as conservatives. I mean, the real problem here is giant corporations dominate our country, shipping jobs and industries overseas, having no loyalty, no patriotism to the country that thrived them and built them and bailed them out in Washington. And they have taken control of the two parties with money and all kinds of other ways we all know. And then they turn the political parties against the people.
Now, let me ask you about Senator Elizabeth Warren. If she would run for president, would you support her?
Well, I don't support, you know, anybody blanket. If she has good positions on corporate crime, I will support her. If she ignores aggression and wars overseas, on which she's a little soft, I would oppose her.
All right, let's get some of these callers on the air. Andrew was called in. We lost Andrew. Let's go now to Bill. Bill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Mr. Nader what he feels the disconnect is between the Libertarian Party and the Liberal Party, because it seems like that they agree on so many issues, and yet somehow the Libertarians always seem to vote for the towards on the Republican side of things, whereas Liberals tend to vote on the Democrat side of things.
Okay, Bill, thanks for your call.
The areas they disagree are quite clear. I mean, they disagree on regulation, no matter whether it's health, safety, or whatever. They disagree on taxes. Libertarians want it one way, and liberals want it the other. However, in recent years, they've become more convergent. I just had a conversation with Ron Paul and Bob Barr. Bob Barr was a Republican congressman. He's running to regain his seat from Georgia. And you can see there's a lot of common ground that I'm not going to go over it now, but there are area after area, civil liberties, wars of aggression, Wall Street, you name it. And that's where we have to lock arms on these areas.
Okay, let's get Ryan on the air. Ryan, thanks for calling into The Source. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. I was wondering if we could start a conversation about term limits. My thoughts are, if we had term limits, our representatives would have to represent us instead of the corporation.
Okay, Ryan, thanks for that call. And Mr. Nader, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm for term limits, but 12 years and out, not 6 years and out. So I am for term limits because I only see a very tiny number of members of Congress who, after 12 years, haven't either worn out or sold out. They either get tired and just, you know, they lose their energy and their challenge, or they are funded heavily and become dependent on their funders. So I would go for 12 years. You have to also get rid of this gerrymandering, because you know what gerrymandering is? It's carving up districts to favor one party or another depending on who controls the state government. And like in Texas, they gerrymandered to try to favor the Republicans. Well, you know what that is? That's politicians having the nerve to pick their own voters. It isn't the voters who pick the candidates, David. Through these computerized gerrymandering squiggly districts, it's the politicians picking their voters.
But right now, nothing has been proven to be illegal. It's just distasteful. Right now in Texas.
Yeah, it has not been shown to be unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, but it certainly is wrong. And we know that where there are more contiguous districts like in Iowa, there are much more competitive races.
Let me ask you about this term limits thing. Now, when you have term limits, don't you give more power to the bureaucracy?
Now, if you have 12 years, you know, it takes about a couple years to really get the hang of things when you're elected. And then you got 10 years to show that you deserve it. Some people say it gives more power to the lobbyists. But look, it isn't a perfect solution by any means, but it's a lot better than having someone in there for 40 or 35 or 40 years. You can never get to the person.
Well, you mentioned Barney Frank, and you held him up as a great go-to guy, and he was in there for quite a long time, 20 years plus.
He was in there for too long. I was critical of him being too soft on the banks. But on the bloated military budget, he did get together with Ron Paul. No, Barney Frank, he got sandpapered down, too. They wear you out after a while. And if you're willing to go the easy way, you collect money, you don't get a challenger in election after election, what's there not to like being in Congress? People salute you. It almost affects everyone.
All right, I'm going to get another caller on the air real quick. David has called in. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Sure, thanks. Hey, Mr. Nader, what would you say to someone like myself who wants to testify at a congressional hearing before the EPA? There's an issue here in Texas regarding creeks and streams and flow that goes down to the Gulf. They may want to use the Endangered Species Act to manage the way we manage our creeks and streams in Texas. And I wanted to testify at a hearing on this. What would you say to a first-time testifier on how to get organized, take a talking points about how we would like to have bottom-up, you know, local-level people involved in the EPA's decision to try to use the Endangered Species Act to manage creeks and streams?
All right, David, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Mr. Nader?
That relate to testifying for Congress, David?
Yes, what he was talking about. But, yes, sir.
Well, one way, I mean, first of all, you got to get an elected official on your side. It could be your own member of Congress who will go to the committee and say, we'd like to hear from this gentleman. If that doesn't work, then you can be asked to submit testimony, which will be put in the printed record and distributed to the table where the media is. It's very hard to testify for Congress now. It's never been harder. They restrict you to 5 minutes. They don't like to sit on hearings. I mean, in older days, they would sit on hearings hour after hour. They thought that was their work, but they spend half their time in Congress literally raising money.
So let me go back to that Venn diagram that we talked about earlier. In the middle, where would Citizens United and the McCutcheon decision be?
But this is where left-right agrees something's got to be done about big money in politics, corrupting politicians and nullifying their vote. They can't agree on the means. That's the next step. Once they get together and they see they don't have horns in each side, they can sit and say, okay, something's got to be done. What's your plan? What's my plan? Let's see what can happen here.
But you think that that could be something that would bring people together? But when you talk about there's uncomfortable trade-offs, you know, that's, and you got to make sure that your priorities are going to be represented by the person that you vote for.
That's true. I'm not talking about a heavy compromise here. I'm talking about you put an issue we both agree. NAFTA and WTO have got to be seriously revised.
All right.
Then you go to the next step. You don't say we got to agree on every dot, every I, every T that's crossed. That you'll never get there.
Ralph Nader, thank you so much for joining us here on The Source today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Anybody wants an autographed copy of the book, go to Nader.org. It's a good book for a gift and for discussion circles.
Out of time.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.